You are listening to the Marty Leeds Mathematical Radio Hour, where we discuss myth, math, spirituality, philosophy, and much, much more. www.thesyncbook.com. Prost and cheers, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Mathematical Radio Hour. I decided to do this show last minute, so this one is going to be a short and sweet episode. I'm going to be speaking with one of the contributors of the second Sync book, Joe Alexander. And just a reminder, you can purchase both the Sync book Volumes 1 and Volume 2 via Amazon.com as well as on thesyncbook.com. And there are just some fantastic contributors in there, just like Christopher Myers, Steve Wilner, Anthony Peake, Scott Onstott, Paul Levy, and many, many more. So please check these books out. Give them as Christmas presents or Hanukkah or whatever particular holiday you like to celebrate. You will not be disappointed. No announcements for this week. We're just going to dive straight in. Our guests tonight are Joe Alexander from Apophenia Productions, and the musical guest is Alaska Zone, the Heretic Foundation. This show is brought to you by the Syncbook Radio. Check out all the wonderful podcasts. 42 Minutes, Always Record, Astro Music, Pentimental, and Synchronize. More information about Syncbook Press, Syncbook Radio, and Syncbook events can be found at www.thesyncbook.com. If you like this podcast, please share it with your friends and please support it by becoming a donor. You'll find the donation links under each episode on the website, and please consider setting up a monthly charge as it helps us keep the lights on and helps keep our microphones humming. And as always, thank you for your support. Our guest tonight is Joe Alexander. Joe Alexander is a professional basketball player and has been involved with alternative and esoteric worldviews for the majority of his life. As a child, he grew up living abroad in Taiwan, Beijing, and Hong Kong, and has recently spent time living in Russia. His education in synchromysticism began in 2007 after discovering the works of Jay Kotsky. Now he periodically releases synchromystic works of his own under the production company Apophenia Productions. Joe looks upon all thoughts as being intellectual works of art, and does not perceive any assertion to be more or less factual than another. From this vantage point, he experiences and explores the abstract with humility, humor, and excitement. His videos can be found on YouTube at BarelyHuman11. So without further ado, let's get pious with Joe Alexander. Joe, my brother, what is happening? Welcome to the show.
Hi, Marty. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, how are things in your world?
Everything's great, man. Living out in California, enjoying life. Soaking in the weirdness that is Sync pretty much every day, and trying to stay alive.
Yeah, so we got to meet in person at the Sync Summit in Olympia there, and we were booked into the same room, and I'll never forget our first encounter because you strolled in at like 2 or 3 in the morning or something like that, and you walked into the room, and I was like sprawled out on this huge king size bed, and all of a sudden this fucking 9'8" dude comes walking in, and I'm like, oh, I better give the bed to this guy, because for those of you that don't know, Joe's a basketball player, and I'm like 5'0.5", and I'm basically a garden gnome. And so I was like, no, I'll sleep in the kid's bunk in the corner there, and you can take the bed because you basically need a warehouse to sleep. So
that's true. Yeah, that was very nice of you, man. You offered it up willingly, and I was certainly grateful, even though my feet still hung off the bed anyway, so it was all in vain.
Yeah, it's just funny when you walk in. I was like, because, you know, we had talked before. I think we did, a Radio 8 Ball together. And then you walked in. I was like, holy shit, this guy's huge. So anyway, that's neither here nor thither. But how'd you like the summit, man?
I loved the summit, actually. It was like my third Sync event where I actually got to meet Sync people. And every time they just, I mean, they always deliver, you know. I just love the conversations that we hatch, the hours of miscellaneous, you know, random Sync topics that we uncover, just like sitting around bar tables or eating dinner together or walking around neighborhoods together. It's always a good time.
Yeah, I mean, it was just so super cool because, I mean, everyone was, like, super smart, and there was, like, no egos, and everyone had this, like, enormous knowledge base and everything from, you know, movies and myths and history and the esoteric and all that stuff. And it was just really refreshing to hang out with such a, like a, you know, a happening group of people. It was just, it was really cool. And I actually liked, like you were saying, I actually liked the conversations more than I liked everything else, like the presentations and all of that sort of thing. It was just interacting with all these people that, you know, I'd only known online. It was really cool. So.
Totally. Yeah. When they set it up for the presentations, that's for like the audience and the people that don't get to go. But they actually, in my opinion, miss out on the best part, which is, you know, everywhere you turn, people are saying interesting things and, you know, you're getting to know people that you otherwise just know through their blogs and that sort of thing. So it's great.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really cool. Yeah. The one thing that I really dug was the, Andras is the Tree of Life thing that we did, because that was just a few hours where it was like, we did a stop, you know, Ezra did his like, you know, musical divination thing, but then it was like, you know, that 10 minutes between each stop or whatever, where we get to chat about with all these different people. And it was really cool. I'm really looking forward to if we do it again this next year. So.
Totally. Wasn't it amazing during that whole process of him taking us through the tree, how everyone brought their own flavor to it? Like everyone had their own expertise that they were able to offer. And it was like, we were just creating this, like psychedelic experience with each other. Yeah, like you said, Ezra bringing his music player, and then David played chiming in all the time, and I think you chimed in a few times. I thought it was really special.
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, we knew there was time constraints there, so it was like not everybody could keep talking. But I remember just like turning over to people, being like, "Oh, there's this other thing I could say here, and this other person could say that here." It was like there was just so much interaction. It was just like everyone was kind of building off each other. It was really interesting. I'd never really experienced anything like that, and it was just really cool. So, and I know that. I'm not sure who's working on the film for that, but I guess there's just like hours and hours of footage there that they have to comb through. So I'm really looking forward to that whenever that gets out. So
totally, I am too.
Yeah. So, but you know, before we get going here, this whole conversation, I wanted to basically talk about at least one video in particular, and that's the 9/11, Back to the Future predicts 9/11 here. And I know you're kind of a sports fanatic or whatever, and I don't want to stereotype sports minded people or whatever, thing like that. But how does someone that kind of come from your background get involved into synchronicity and like the esoteric aspects of film and things like that? Because it seems like most of the, like, sports minded people that I know are more interested in, you know, statistics and chase and tail and, you know, that sort of thing. Like what got you into this in the first place?
Yeah, I'm definitely an anomaly in the sports world. I mean, to be involved in synchromysticism off the bat makes you a strange person. Mm-hmm. But I don't meet many people in my field, or even, like you said, sports fans in general, who would be susceptible to diving deep into sync. And for me personally, I don't know. I guess it's just my personality. I loved sports and to the point where I wanted to play professionally. And I also was always into exploring like the inner realms and trying to get the most out of my potential in life. And I think those two certainly have spaces where they go hand in hand, because in sports, you're really trying to bring out of yourself everything you have. And in like journeys of spiritual awakening, you're trying to go inside and bring out everything you have. So there definitely is overlap there. I don't think that many sports players take it to the level that I've taken it by being a member of the sync community and embracing all the material that goes along with that. But for me, it was just a very natural progression. I mean, exploring the sync world to me is exploring the universe, which is the same thing as exploring the deepest parts of yourself. And if you want to know about yourself, you want to excel, you want to succeed, you got to know yourself. And so they really go hand in hand, and they've worked for me. So.
Yeah, the one thing that I've gotten from people that have excelled in, I mean, in many areas in life, but even in sports, is that they realize that, you know, it's not just a physical pursuit; it's also a mental pursuit. It's an inner pursuit, because you have to work on every aspect of yourself to get to that pinnacle, and that seems to be what you're doing now, right?
Totally. You know, the mental aspect of sports, everyone understands, carries a huge load in whether or not you succeed. And for me, anytime I embrace mentally stimulating material, whether it be a book, an interesting podcast, you know, an articulate speaker, or something really heavy like sync material, it always spurs my brain to action, to the point where I can have better practices with basketball, I can have better rehab sessions, I can approach the game from new angles that allow me to play better. And So in many ways, I've allowed myself to embrace sync because it's good exercise for my brain. And even though it dabbles in areas that many people would say defy logic and sort of take you into a mystical realm where you would be distracted from things that would help you in sports, I believe from my own experience that all it has done is really tune up my brain to the point where everything that I touch, I'm more liable to have success in, because honestly, I feel smarter because of my involvement with sync. So,
but before we go on here, maybe we should like define some terms, and at least how yeah. you see them. Like, what is synchromysticism for you? How do you define that?
Yikes. So this is a tough one for me, and only a true synchromystic would define it the way that I am, which is, and I've said this on 42 Minutes before, which is synchromysticism to me is whatever you want it to be. And I know that that's an awful description. You know, objectivists would want to kill me for that, but synchromysticism is really, it's mysticism, which is, it's about a subjective interpretation of the things that you're experiencing. And so, you know, interpreting things subjectively means you have the freedom to choose however you want to interpret them. So where are the limits of that, right? So is a TV synchromysticism? Well, if you want it to be, then it is, right? And the reason that I think that that definition works and that it's powerful is because synchromysticism as sort of an action or as an endeavor is the practice of disintegrating all rigid belief structures and all rigid thought structures. And so if you define it as it's whatever you want it to be, it really boils it down to just being a subjective endeavor. And to me, that's what really sets you up to be able to embrace the world in a manner that allows you to reveal sinks, right? Now, I'm sure you've experienced this where you try to find sinks, and if you're in too much of a logical space, you just can't find them. You can only find them when you're in a really illogical space, right? Where thoughts don't actually connect. And so basically that definition just makes it very mystical. It's whatever you want it to be. So I could continue on from that, but I'll just leave it at that.
It's, you know, it's almost like going beyond the gloss and kind of sucking the marrow out of whatever it is you're pursuing in one way, if you know what I'm saying. Right. I remember Scott Onstott said one time he was talking about when he would go out, he would go hunting for morel mushrooms, right? And when he would try to look for them, he would never be able to find them. But when he stopped looking for them, that's when he would, like, all of a sudden they would appear out of nowhere. And it's almost like this sort of like giving yourself up to the fluidity of creation or something like that, that allows these sort of creative phenomenon, these synchromystic phenomena to kind of appear. Is that kind of how you see it?
Yeah, in many ways it definitely applies. Like rigid thought structures to me, or objectivism, is when there's a lot of force involved, right? There's a lot of trying to fit square pegs into square holes and round pegs into round holes and making sure everything fits and that your old thought habits are in line with your new ones and all your schema work together. But the relaxation that you're talking about that allows flow to happen, and that to me really opens up a whole new world of what I would consider to be non-thought, really. It's where you're just experiencing your sense data but not really processing it and allowing things to flow. And I don't have an answer for why that creates this magical outcome where you're suddenly able to find the mushrooms, or you're suddenly able to find the connections, you're suddenly able to see sinks. But I know that it does because I've experienced this. And for that reason, I think there is a lot of validity to this idea that if you let go, if you just release all these rigid constructs that you have in your mind, suddenly a new world is opened up. Definitely.
How much of this idea comes to you when you play sports? I mean, like, just kind of giving up yourself up, the fluidity, if you will. Does that help?
Yeah, but I would say that it's a different sort of giving up, right? So in sports, you develop muscle memory and you hammer home certain patterns that then become instinctive. And they're patterns that were not necessarily instinctive, you know, when you were born. So they're new patterns that you're developing. And when you give up thought in those cases and begin to flow, you rest on those adopted patterns, but I believe that in Sinker mysticism, your relinquishing of control is more about handing control back over to parts of yourself that that formed habits even before you were born, or that you were born with, or that are part of the Akashic record, or that are part of collective consciousness. So when you relinquish control, you tap into those habits or those thought processes or those inputs that are available to you. So it's a little bit different with sports, I believe.
Do you feel like society sort of whittles away those habits as you grow older? Like, you know, we're kind of born into the society and we're sort of molded in the way that the current culture paradigm wants us to be molded, through TV, through media, through stimuli, that sort of thing. Do you feel like there's an intentional whittling away of those things, and Sinker mysticism allows you to get back to that, almost like the core ideas of being what it truly is to be a human being, if you know what I'm asking?
Yeah, in a way, I think there's a lot of truth to that, and I just pull that right back to this sort of mainstream idea in Buddhism about having a beginner's mind, having the mind of a child. In many ways, that's what Sinker mysticism allows you to do. When you get into flow, when you relax your thought patterns, and not just relax your thought patterns, but when you actively seek to disintegrate your highly constructed and rigid thought patterns, you know, you just become like a child again, who's seeing the world for the first time and is thinking. And I really think that there's a lot of beneficial things that can happen from that. And as far as the intentional whittling down from society, I'm sure that happens on some levels. But I would say that for the most part, even if there was no intentional intervention in those realms, you know, our habits that we develop are just, they're bound to become, solid chain-like structures. You know, I think that's just the nature of human beings, is that we want to develop these habits that ensure our survival. And after decades and decades, they become the chains that sort of bind us. So it's important to me that I recognize that those chains are developing, they exist currently, and I don't want to be susceptible to the prison that they put me in, because those chains are mental, right? And I feel like we all have infinite mental potential, and so I don't want these mental chains in my mind that my body and my brain are just instinctively creating to help my survival, because I want to be a spiritual being, you know, whatever that means. Yeah.
Well, what does that mean to you?
What does that mean? So spiritual to me is just sort of this fluffy term that I ascribe to all abstract concepts. Basically, anything that can't be pinned down by sensory data, things that I can't touch and can't experience very much beyond my emotional connection to them, right? Or beyond my conceptual interpretation of them, right? So things that my brain can sort of wrap around, even if only for a moment. So those to me are the spiritual realms. And I don't necessarily believe that those are trans-dimensional endeavors, or that there really is a distinct difference between the spiritual and the non-spiritual realm. I just liken it to this old concept that all advanced technology will be perceived as magic, and I believe that that is, in fact, what we're experiencing as being spiritual realms. It's really as simple as that to me. I think that in the centuries to come, a lot of the things that we ascribe to the spiritual realm now will be really readily identifiable by science and explainable.
So when did this pursuit start for you? Like, when did you start kind of like changing, you know, if you will, breaking these chains?
Totally. It's been a process, and an exponential process, actually, that really lifted off once I embraced the Sync community, because up until that point, I was just relegated to whatever books I could get my hands on. And I think the first one that really sent me on that journey was one about the subconscious mind, and it inspired me to try to meditate and dive into the depths that this book told me I had. And after doing that, experiencing meditation, I could really physically feel that there was something inside my brain that was connecting to a whole other universe full of truths and ideas that I had access to. And, from there, I just was so taken with this, with the idea that there's an infinite realm inside of me that I could embrace, that I just never really stopped. So I think it started for me when I was maybe 11 or 12 years old.
What kind of meditative techniques have you used? What have you engaged in?
Yeah, I started with a lot of guided meditation that I was actually introduced to first by my martial arts teacher when I was living abroad as a kid, and he would stress the importance of taking time throughout the week to basically just lie quiet and completely empty your mind of thoughts. And that's probably the most fundamental way that I meditate today. I'd say it's the way most people do, which is to think nothing. And I think that when you think nothing, you sort of open that door where you can walk into the realm of flow. Unfortunately, there aren't really distinct definitions for these things like flow and getting into that headspace. But I think you and I and other members of the Sync community and other people who are in this space can identify what I'm talking about. But other than that, I think I've meditated a lot about intention, you know, things that I want to manifest and just visualizing them and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think when most people talk about meditation, they think about like transcendental meditation. It means you got to sit in Indian style and you got to say Om and that sort of thing. But really, when you meditate, it's almost like you could just be laying in bed and just kind of just close your eyes and there you are. Meditation can almost be this just state that you always try to attain in doing anything in one respect. I mean, would you agree with that?
Absolutely, I'd agree with that. It's not complicated.
Yeah, exactly. It's not complicated. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, your work goes by the name of Apophenia Productions. Maybe before we kind of like forge ahead here, do you want to explain what Apophenia is?
Yeah, totally. So Apophenia is sort of a parody of my work. So that's why I named the production company, I guess you could call it a company. I named it Apophenia because apophenia is this phenomenon where human beings find patterns in everything that they see, and specifically patterns that don't actually exist. So it's sort of a play on our ability to create these, create patterns and connections in sort of this insane way. It's almost a psychosis. So I thought that was funny because I never wanted my videos and any of my work in sync to be taken so seriously to the point where people would question whether I like believed in this. And that term belief is a little fuzzy for me, but you know, I just always wanted people to understand that I was approaching this with a degree of uncertainty, right? With a playful, explorative attitude. And I think that the term apophenia does that perfectly.
So I actually looked. I was just kind of looking on the internet before the show, and I noticed apophenia and pareidolia are sort of they're like comfy bedfellows, if you will, that they're ideas that share similar characteristics. And I looked up one of the definitions of pareidolia, and it says that pareidolia is a psychological phenomenon involving a vague and random stimulus being perceived as significant. And immediately, this whole like psychological malady or psychosis, as you were saying, if you will, is predicated under the idea that significance in and of itself can somehow be quantitatively measured, if you will. And to me, this there's like a fundamental issue there with trying to denounce phenomena that seem unrelated, because it's like you can't quantitatively measure significant. So I mean, if you know what I'm saying, like to me, it's like by claiming that, oh, this is all a bunch of nonsense, it's just patterns that aren't there, it's like you're automatically saying that the world is insignificant in and of itself, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely. To me, that's the term significance, and who gets to determine what is significant and not is all about what collective do you ascribe to and what scientific dictator do you bow to. And for that reason, I think synchromysticism is really special, because even within the community, we have things that we value, like themes and threads and topics and actors that we value. But at no point does anyone say, well, this is more significant than that, right? Because we're not creating some synchromistic scientific dictatorship where some things are valuable and other things aren't valuable. And I think that's really important, and it's really special.
Yeah, that was the one thing that, you know, at the Sync Summit that I'd never really experienced within a conversation before, was that people were just throwing ideas out there and bouncing them around and being like, huh, that's interesting, without having some sort of overarching opinion on the whole thing. You know, that it was like I had never really experienced a conversation like that, because every time, at least more often than not, when you enter a conversation, people already have their preconceived notions. They already have their ideologies firmly in place. And it's like you're just batting back and forth. It's like, you know, and it's almost like a war. But this was more just like a volley, where it was just like it was playful, if you will. And I thought that was so refreshing. And I wish more people would engage in conversations like that.
Totally. And I think that spawns out of, at least what I believe, is most people in the synchromystic community watch a lot of documentaries. Mm-hmm. And to me, people who watch documentaries are subjected to this interactive experience between the audience and the presenter where there's no interaction, right? They are forced to sit in silence and watch this documentary on their computer for possibly hours on end. They can't question the presenter. They can't tell the presenter they're wrong. Obviously, they can close it if they want to, but really, they just have to sit there and suspend disbelief until the presenter's argument reaches critical mass. And a lot of times, what I've found happens is that I begin documentaries not believing what the person's saying, and then halfway through, I'm kind of coming along, and by hour three, I'm really on board. And what that's taught me is that there is validity to the most outrageous ideas that you could possibly hear. It might take 10, it might take 20, it might take 30 hours until you can finally subscribe to it, but just the practice of going through that experience with documentary after documentary, I think, warps your brain to the point where you no longer listen to other people talk and immediately feel the need to tell them they're wrong or immediately feel the need to argue with them. And I think that's what we're experiencing in synchromysticism, is a whole group of people who've watched tons of documentaries online and are now comfortable with letting other people be a presenter.
That's a great perspective, man. Well said, man. That's cool.
Thanks.
All right, let's get into this, because I wanted to focus this discussion around your, particularly around this, the Back to the Future Predicts 9/11 video, because this is the one that's kind of made its way around the internet, and really in one way, as you were saying, there's an uncertainty there. It's one that kind of strikes the heart of the mystery of strange coincidences or synchronicities in pop culture. But before we go into this, like why Back to the Future in particular? Was this a series you always loved as a kid, or were you just happened to watching this? Were you watching this one day and all these syncs popped up? How did this come about?
Totally. My family was obsessed with this movie. We all loved it. It was one of those things that brought us together. My father really loved to watch it, and it was something we quoted constantly. So, you know, naturally with synchromysticism, you're going to tend towards the material you're most familiar with, and I was most familiar with this movie. I could probably watch it in my head if I wanted to, scene by scene. So once I got into this mode in synchromysticism where I was seeing symbols everywhere, I mean, absolutely everywhere, like on street signs, on billboards, in my room, in the words that my friends were speaking, Back to the Future being like such a fixture in my brain, started to just spout off all these different syncs, specifically ones pertaining to Christopher Lloyd. And once I started to go down this Christopher Lloyd route, the rest of the Back to the Future stuff opened up for me.
So can we, just so everyone that's listening has kind of an idea of what we're talking about, can you maybe walk through some of the major connections you made in the video, so just some of the major points? And for those of you who are listening, you can watch the video. It's only like 11 minutes long, but just for this discussion, can you just kind of point out some of the major things you found there?
Yeah, totally. But I'd like to preface it by saying that, so this movie, I called it Back to the Future 9/11 Prediction, and then I threw on Illuminati Conspiracy in the back. And the reason was because I wanted people to watch this video, and I understand that if I throw in Illuminati Conspiracy, that people will be drawn to it. And I don't think that that's a bad thing, because, you know, for me, synchromysticism has really enhanced my life, and if I had never stumbled upon Jay Kotze's videos, then I would be in a totally different space, and I'm really grateful that I had stumbled upon his stuff. So I threw that in there not because I believe that this is some Illuminati conspiracy. I threw it in the hopes that some people would stumble upon it while searching for conspiracies, because, as you know, the conspiracy searcher is like he's right on the tip of jumping into a whole realm of esoterica that is really fascinating. At least I was, and I think most people that I know that are into synchromysticism started in conspiracy. So this actually isn't a conspiracy in my mind. It's not some pre-planned 9/11 issue where the directors of Back to the Future knew about this terrorist attack 20 years beforehand. I believe that it has more strange, like universal consciousness implications to it, but I do believe that there are enough pieces of sync evidence to say that this can't be overlooked. So, for example, the film Back to the Future is about a lightning bolt that strikes this clock tower, and the destruction of this tower is basically the theme of the movie, except it's happening in conjunction with this terrorist attack. And even though the tower getting struck is at the end of the film, and the terrorist attack is technically at the beginning, they actually happen at the exact same time. So once I realized that, I realized you have this tower that gets destroyed, you have this terrorist attack, I started to look at other elements, and I realized that there are the literal numbers 9/11 surrounding this event, this tower getting destroyed. And the number 9/11 appears on clocks in Back to the Future, which to me was obvious. It's trying to denote the time or the date. And so I put these two together. I have this clock tower being destroyed, this terrorist event happening, these 9/11s indicating the date. And I thought, that's just too weird. It just sounds too much like a prediction. But then I also realized that the actual plot of Back to the Future is not only a terrorist attack, but it's Marty. It's about a person who travels back in time to warn about a terrorist attack. So it's like it couldn't be more perfect of a series of events. It's warning us about this terrorist attack. And not only that, but if you're familiar with tarot and if you're familiar with symbology in any form, you can understand that, you know, lightning coming from the sky, like, for example, lightning on the tarot tower card, I was just talking with Will Morgan about this, could be perceived as Pegasus, right, the winged flying horse, which Pegasus actually literally means lightning. And in Greek mythology, you know, Zeus used Pegasus, the horse, to help him bring his lightning bolts. Okay, so this is just one example of how symbology is used, where this winged and flying horse can depict a lightning bolt. And this is also used throughout antiquity, where if they would see UFOs or they would try to depict flying saucers, they could depict them as lightning bolts. And so the idea here is that a flying assailant piece of fire from the sky is just the perfect symbology for an airplane. And the fact that it strikes a tower while a terrorist attack is taking place, while these giant 9/11s are being formed in the movie, while someone is trying to warn us about this event that's going to happen decades in the future, that's literally what Marty's trying to do. He's trying to warn us about this event. It was just too much for me to not say, hey, let's make a playful video about this. Now, again, it doesn't mean that I believe that this was a conspiracy. It doesn't mean I believe anyone actually knew about it or that the script writers were trying to warn us. It just means that there's some high weirdness going on here that at the very least will make you laugh. So that's it.
So let's talk a little bit about the because there's actually points in the movie where you say, okay, they're in the clocks, they're depicting 9/11, but actually the clocks are depicting 6/11, and what you're doing is looking at this upside down. And, you know, people could say, oh, you know, this is a force fit. He's reaching here. You know, it's like, oh, you're taking 6/11 and, you know, mirroring it. But at the same time, this is something that I do with mathematics all the time. And it works, you know, it works like goddamn gold, you know. And so, you know, when you see this, when you were mentioned earlier, it's like the idea of your mind began to open to these things. Through your own pursuit of your spiritual or mystical pursuit, it allows you to kind of let these things show up in your life. And I could see how people would watch the film and see that and not be and be like, oh, look at this. This is ridiculous. This guy's full of shit, you know. But it's like at the same time, it's like you have to have gone through some sort of, you know, you would have to have gone down that mystical path yourself to even see these sorts of things. And as you were saying, as soon as you do, these sorts of things start to bloom. And, you know, do you feel like there's a polarity in making a video like this where it's like you're automatically going to get one or the other for the people that's watching it?
Oh, I've definitely found that. I mean, I breeze through the comments whenever I need a good laugh, and I find people who say this is mind-blowing and my life has changed. I can't wait to watch more. And then there's nobody in between this spectrum where on the other side they all say, you are on drugs and this is the most retarded thing I've ever seen. These are 6/11s. They're not 9/11s. And it always, you know, makes me realize that everyone is in a different headspace with where they are in embracing symbology. And that's okay. You know, I at one point in my life would have watched a video like this and thought it was completely bonkers, which in many ways it is. So, but I also want to speak to that, which is that, you know, if you're not familiar with in the process of encoding, then you're not going to be very familiar with the process of decoding, right? So, you know, as an example, as a quick crossover, you know, I'm a computer programmer as well. So when I decode people's code, you know, I know what to look for, right? And someone who's not familiar with programming would look at what I'm decoding and they would have no idea how I'm decoding it, right? So people who aren't familiar with symbology, people who have never written books or tried to embed secret information or secret codes into their stories, into their narratives, right? They're not as apt as adept at looking at other people's narratives and decoding the stuff that they might have been trying to fit in there. So for that reason, I think that a lot of times they overlook these little minor tweaks that I make, like 611 is actually 911 or 119 is actually 911, right? So I always find that interesting.
Now, I mean, you had mentioned that you don't believe that, you know, who was the director? Is it Robert Zemeckis? Is that the director?
Yeah, Robert Zemeckis and Steven Spielberg worked on it. Yep.
Steven Spielberg, okay. I mean, you say that, okay, you don't believe that they were intentionally putting this stuff in the film. But at the same time, we do seem that there's a lot of these things that come up all over culture. That it's like, hey, it's like, you know, it's in The Simpsons here and there, you know, or it's in, you know, in The Matrix and things like that. Do you feel like there could be a possibility that there is maybe a group of people that are actually kind of, you know, kind of influencing Hollywood in this way to try to direct people, you know, if you know what I'm saying, trying to direct people to these coming events? Or do you think that's
totally
just kind of nonsense?
Totally. So to me, the intentionality of it all is a complete mystery. It could be that a lot of these things were put in there. It could be that none of them were put in there intentional. You know, I can't pretend that I know the answer to that. Mm-hmm. I think that the only way to really know would be to get a firsthand account from someone who worked on these scripts, which would really be great. I would love that. But at this point, I don't know. And so for that reason, I don't actually declare in any of my work that, oh, this is definitely intentional. But, I mean, if it is intentional, it's very interesting. If it's not intentional, it's still very, very interesting. So that's how I look at it.
Yeah, and I don't know if you this, because, I mean, I feel the same way. It's like, you know, I can't really take a stand either way. But did you just recently see the thing with Jim Carrey, in which he came out on Jimmy Kimmel and he, like, you know, he put this triangle up in his mouth and it's the all mocking tongue of the Illuminati, I think is what he called it. Did you see that?
I didn't.
Okay, yeah. Anyway, you should watch it after this conversation here. Go watch this because it's so interesting. Because Jim Carrey, I mean, he's obviously a smart dude. He's witty. He's a creative guy. All of that. And you know, he comes out in Jimmy Kimmel. And for the first like minute and a half, 2 minutes, that's all he's talking about is basically there's a conspiracy to dumb down culture and all of this sort of thing. And it's like, okay, it's weird because it's like, okay, well, what's happening there? Because obviously he's hip to something, if you will.
Yeah.
Whether it's the mass ignorance of people and he thinks it's all a bunch of malarkey, or if he's literally trying to, you know, send out some information in the same way that maybe Robert Zemeckis is, if you will. And so I think about, you know, what would it be good for if somebody, let's say, like Steven Spielberg or Robert Zemeckis, knew about this sort of thing, you know, and they were trying to warn people, you know, let's just hypothetically here, you know, would this be the best way to do it, if you know what I'm saying, like to do it so cryptically? Because it's like, I don't know, I just struggle with this. And I think a lot of the people in the Sync book or the Sync community do, because it's like, is this intentional? Is this not? I mean, I don't know if there's a question there, but it's just sounded kind of something I'm trying to throw around in my own head to really kind of wrap my head around it, you know?
Totally, totally. So the cryptic nature of a lot of these syncs really arouses your suspicion as to what is the actual intention of these people if they actually know about this stuff.
Yeah.
And to me, I would have to gear on the side of there's no intention to actually explain and predict and warn people about, we're talking about 9/11 obviously.
Sure.
There's no intention to warn, but there is an intention to throw it in there that, like, hey, I know about this, like, I'm hip to this. And, you know, that's just my personal take. If someone had to pin me down and say, what's your opinion, I would say that, you know, if they put this stuff in intentionally, then I would say that they're not trying to warn anybody. Like, all right, for example, in Back to the Future, I mean, they have a scene that shows the Twin Towers in Back to the Future amidst all this other craziness that I just described about 9/11. And as you can see in my video, they show the Twin Towers falling, right?
Mm-hmm.
It might seem a little crazy when you watch my video because you have to turn the screen upside down, but you know, when you think about all the options for how they could have depicted the Twin Towers, what could have happened, you know, a flower vase could have gone in front of the towers, or someone could have said the word Twin Towers in the movie, but no. In Back to the Future, they show the Twin Towers, and then they show them falling. And so, to me, I'm like, all right, let's entertain the possibility that they knew about this, and then let's look at the extremely cryptic nature with which they put it in this film. And because it's so obscure, because nobody has seen it, I think I'm the only one that's seen it after 2 decades of this movie coming out.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine that they were trying to warn anybody. I would imagine more so that it was like sort of an ego trip, you know, like we know this is happening and we're wow. putting it in our art. So
that's an interesting take, man. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you were talking about the fact that, you know, upside down, we're talking about the clocks upside down. We're talking about, you know, who was it, Christopher Lloyd, that's hanging upside down? Then all of a sudden the screen is right. That's when the Twin Towers fall, right? Well, this is one of the, I would say, fundamental aspects of mysticism is the concepts of as above, so below, is looking at things in a different light, looking at things from a different angle. And so if somebody was to put something in the film, this would be, you know, mystically or cryptically, as you're saying, subtly, this would be an ingenious and perfect mystical way to do such.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Totally. And it's the perfect metaphor for looking at it from a different angle, right? Like, look at it upside down. Or
yeah.
Turn things, take the way you look at the world and turn it on its head. It's like, it's just a beautiful metaphor for mysticism.
Okay, so this is the thing about intentionality here, because I was speaking with this girl I'm seeing, and she's a film major here at the U of O, and she was saying that, you know, every little minute detail, every little nuance of every shot, of every scene or whatever in these big budget films are planned out to the T. Like, to the T. I mean, everything from the color to the wall, you know. And in that, as you point out, in that scene, we see the Statue of Liberty as the lamp in the same frame as the World Trade Center falling. And, you know, it's like, you know, people that are not aware of this need to know that no matter what we take away from this scene, as you were saying, that shit ain't an accident. You know, this is planned. So, you know, when you get rebuttals or refutations, criticisms for pointing these little minuscule things out, do you ever feel like, you know, well, maybe I'm making too much out of it? Or, you know, it's like, no, this stuff is so planned that it's like, how could that possibly not be a connection?
Yeah, a lot of times, yes. You know, when people say, well, that's such a minute detail and that can't possibly have significance, but then we bounce right back to the question of what is significant.
Yeah.
But in the case of this Statue of Liberty hand, I mean, it's obvious that somebody wanted it in there in conjunction with the Twin Towers. It's like, you don't just throw these two landmark elements of New York into this obscure living room that's not even in New York for no reason, you know? So.
Yeah. So a lot of times when I see these things, like come up in film and in music and things like that, you know, I personally come to the conclusion that this world is a piece of art, that this world is, you know, moving poetry, a moving myth. And these sort of, like, you know, films and things like that are brushstrokes that are made by artistically minded people that somehow, you know, even if they're completely unaware of it themselves, they're foreshadowing events that are being unfolded in the collective unconscious. Do you know what I'm speaking of here? Like, almost that artists that are more in tune with the fluidity, as going back to this, the fluidity of creation, are somehow naturally bringing these things out. So if there's no intention whatsoever, these elements are still going to somehow play out. What's your take on this? Do you kind of see that as well?
Yeah, totally. I think, you know, the nature of art is such that if you were to ask the artist, how did they do this, they would say, I don't know.
Exactly.
Right? It just flowed through me. I mean, that's it. Obviously, you can master your craft, you can get better at it, but really, mastering art is about learning to let go and let the subtle genius that is already inside of you come and express itself. And that genius is an extension of the universe's genius, right? So, obviously, anything that you create from that is going to be a reflection of the beautiful, unexplainable piece of artwork that is the universe. And so, you know, definitely when you look at movies, which are, in my opinion, humanity's greatest achievement as it pertains to art, you know, you're looking at something really, you're looking at like the deepest trenches of the collective conscious. You're looking at like the genius of the human species as we've existed on Earth, you know, since the beginning, and that is like bubbling up into this piece of cinema. You know, I love when people look at movies and they can't appreciate the fact that they're looking at the pinnacle of human art right now. That's how I see it, and to me, art is an expression of our inner genius. So we're looking at something special when we watch movies, for sure.
So besides the videos that you produced, like how creative have you been in your life? Like, do you draw? Do you paint? Do you make music? Do you do any of that?
Yeah, I pretty much dabble in everything except painting. You know, I make music here and there. I love to write. I love to write songs. I make music. But my biggest works of art have been these sync videos for sure. So yeah, I would definitely consider myself to be artsy. Yeah.
What kind of instruments do you play?
Well, I wouldn't call it an instrument, but I used to play the drums. No offense to any drummers out there. I play the guitar a little bit, and mostly I just like to write songs. I like to write music and pretend that I can sing it.
Hey, I do the same thing.
Well, you're actually a really good musician. I've heard your work, and it's really impressive, actually.
I appreciate that, man.
Yeah, of course. No, I'm not just buttering you up. It's really, really impressive.
Oh, so. Thanks, man.
Actually, I can't remember, what was the name of the song that they played at the Sync Summit? Because I had the intention at that time to try to flag you down to download it, but I think that you were gone at that time. But it was really, really good. I can't remember the name of it.
Oh, at the Sync Summit? Oh, you mean when we did Radio 8-Ball?
We did Radio 8-Ball, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was Song for the Damon.
Song for the Damon, yeah. No, I like that song, man. I connected with that.
I'll send it to you, man, of course.
Great. It was great.
Thanks.
Really
dude.
Great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So what's next for you? I mean, when you pursue this stuff, does this stuff just come to you? Do you actively pursue this out? I mean, I know you talked about just kind of letting go and that sort of thing, and then this sort of stuff comes to you. But like, you know, are you always kind of like looking into the next thing? Because I know for me, I'm always like, what's the next book I'm going to read? What's the next song I'm going to write? That sort of thing. Is that your kind of mentality, or how do you pursue life in that way?
Totally. Well, with regard to sync, I mean, my biggest struggle is trying to muffle my sort of like sync motor that's going on, because it's going on all the time. I'm seeing connections here and there, and it's terrible. I can't watch a movie, you know, with my girlfriend without stopping to tell her every 5 seconds about what sync event is currently happening.
And she gets so annoyed with you, right?
she's pretty accepting. She accepts it. So she's used to it by now. But with regard to what I'm working on now, I mean, unfortunately, I'm working on something that is certainly going to get me branded as like someone who's milking conspiracy theories, because it has to do with JFK. But I'm going to tie it back to the Future, and I think that it's something that people are really going to like. So,
cool. So, I think we're working on another Sync Summit. Maybe I'm premature in saying this, but I'm hoping next year. So, hopefully, we'll get to talk again next year. That would be super cool.
Yeah, I mean, my hope would be that they do something every year, because, you know, obviously not everyone can make it at each event. I know I certainly won't be able to, so, you know, the more opportunities, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, so if there is another event, I officially challenge you to a game of one-on-one, brother.
You're
and
on,
I will school
man.
You.
I only play for money, though, man, so you got to bring some cash.
Oh, really? I can't dribble my way out of a kitchen sink, dude.
I'm just kidding. Cool. We can play some horse. That's cool.
cool, man. Short and sweet. It was really good talking to you, man. And maybe we should do this again in the future.
Yeah, I'm more than willing. I appreciate you having me on, and it was good to connect with you again.
Yeah, shoot me a message or something like that when you get a new video out or something like that. And we'll schedule this again. This is cool.
All right.
It's been great talking to you, dude.
You too, Mari.
All right, be well, man.
Yeah, you too, brother.
All right, cheers.
Later.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Our outro song is called Sit Back, Relax, and is provided by the Alaskan hip-hop and rock outfit, The Heretic Foundation. I got a chance to share a stage with these guys a few years back when my band did a short tour in Alaska, and these guys just killed it live. The frontman, Thomas Rode, can just command a mic like no other, and we had a blast, drinking too much tequila and dancing our heinies off. You can check out a few of their cuts at reverbnation.com/The Heretic Foundation. Coming up in the next episode of the Marty Leeds Mathematical Radio Hour will be master builder and sacred geometrician Randall Carlson. We're going to be speaking for a few hours on all sorts of great topics like sacred geometry, of course, arithmomancy, number symbolism, the precession of the equinoxes, as well as the work he has been doing with Graham Hancock. So look forward to all of that. Be sure to stay tuned, and always remember, an opinion without pie is just an onion. Thanks.
relax.
Fuck that, get up and dance.
Sit back, relax.
Fuck that, get up and dance.
Sit back, relax.
Fuck that, get up and dance.
Sit back, relax.
Fuck that, get up and dance. Calm hat, relax, now simmer down. Just relate while we blow through another town. More lost souls I found while stepping on this fragile ground. Check your demeanor because you're looking meaner than a pit bull. Let music be the attitude cleaner. These young dumb Republicans floss in front. Take control of your own life. I'll need your advice. I do whatever I like. Hit the woods and take a hike. These lies and flaws has got you stuck in a mirage. Your brain's on standstill, confined to martial law. I only sit in politic with the rugged and raw. Influential individuals wave your middle finger in the air and scream, fuck tomorrow, fuck tomorrow, fuck tomorrow. And if you just don't care, scream, fuck tomorrow, fuck tomorrow. Just don't stand there.
Sit back, relax.
Fuck that, get up and dance.
Sit back, relax.
Fuck that, get up and dance.
Sit back, relax.
Fuck that, get up and dance.
Sit back, relax.
Fuck that, get up and dance. Wanna see us not flourish. Courage like the cowardly dog. I maneuver through thick fog. The heretics come through, delete your whole catalog. Most of these cats is analog. Go find some new dialogue. No modern day 9-to-5's here. Just surviving off the vibe. Month to month, year to year. What must I do to provide for my crew? The heretic foundation, I thought you knew. Why's everybody sitting on the seat of their pants? Yo, fuck that, you gots to get up and dance. Enhance the value of your everyday situation. Stop, look, and listen, there's no time for waiting. Get yourself together, man. Get yourself together. Get yourself together and let's start creating.
Sit back, relax.
Fuck that, get up and dance.
Sit back, relax.
Fuck that, get up and dance.
Sit back, relax.
Fuck that, get up and dance.
Sit back, relax.
Fuck that, get up and dance.
Listening to the Marty Leeds Mathmagical Radio Hour. More information about the work of Marty Leeds can be found at MartyLeeds33.com. You can download his full-length studio record, Opus Medico Musica, from iTunes or Amazon.com. And be sure and check out his books, Pi and the English Alphabet, Volume 1 and 2, and The Peacock's Tales, available at MartyLeeds33.com and Amazon. For hours of free video, check out his YouTube channel at MartyLeeds33. More information about SyncBook Press, SyncBook Radio, or SyncBook Events can be found at thesyncbook.com. If you like this podcast, please support it by becoming a donor. You'll find the donation links under each episode on the website and consider setting up a monthly charge. Thanks so much, and though some people think it's a piece of cake, we all know it's easy as pie.